Welcome to the Legal Nurse Podcast, where you'll get tips to expand your legal nurse consulting skills. Every week, you'll hear from experts from within and outside the legal nurse consulting business. They'll share their knowledge to help you grow. Your show is moderated by Pat Iyer, a legal nurse consultant with over 30 years' experience. So join our community, sit back, relax, and get ready to learn. Here's your host, Pat Iyer.
Hi, this is Pat Iyer and bringing you Legal Nurse Podcast 79. The topic for today is infection control as a measure of the quality of healthcare. In our previous Legal Nurse Podcast, which was Legal Nurse Podcast 78, Dr. Larry Cohen spoke about the quality of healthcare. As an intensivist, Dr. Cohen developed expertise about measuring quality indicators and making adjustments in care in response to trends that the data revealed. Hospital or healthcare-acquired infections are one of the indicators of quality. Legal nurse consultants who work on medical malpractice cases may be asked by attorneys to offer opinions on whether an infection was preventable or properly treated. Healthcare providers used to freely prescribe vancomycin to treat infections. This intravenously administered drug is powerful, you know that, but it stimulated a generation of bacteria that is resistant to its use. Vancomycin is often used to treat organisms that are resistant to other antibiotics. So the available treatment options are reduced if a patient develops resistance. Vancomycin-resistant enterococcus, or VRE, was first detected in 1986. This organism is now prevalent in most hospitals in the United States, where vancomycin-resistant gene can be transferred to other microorganisms. This may result in spread to many patients. VRE causes infections in multiple body sites, including the bloodstream, wounds, and the urinary tract. Enterococci are normal body flora found in the GI tract and are naturally resistant to many antibiotics other than vancomycin. Colonization with VRE, once established, may be indefinite, leaving the patient and others at risk for possible infection. Healthcare providers must control the spread of VRE to minimize the risk to patients. There are four areas of control which are the standard of care in treating these high-risk patients. First is prudent and appropriate use of vancomycin, such as limiting the use of this antibiotic to those circumstances that are known to be effective. Secondly, provide educational programs for the staff. These need to be tailored to the specific audience for which it is intended. For example, physicians need a greater appreciation of the ultimate outcomes of inappropriate prescriptions and the use of vancomycin, and to recognize the need to not use this drug in cases of colonization, but to save it for treatment interventions. Infection control measures should be implemented. These include appropriate use of isolation for colonized or infected patients, proper hand decontamination before and after touching patients, and contaminated surfaces. Detection and reporting of the occurrence of VRE is essential to control and identify the spread. Recognition of the occurrence of VRE allows for proper implementation of control measures, including epidemiological studies to determine those at greater risk and measures most effective in minimizing the occurrence of these infections. These may include prompt notification of staff who are caring for VRE patients. Let's look at another aspect of infection control, which is urinary tract infections. We used to think it was inevitable that patients got urinary tract infections from Foley catheters. We used to keep catheters in any incontinent patient and for days or weeks longer than necessary. Now, hospital-acquired urinary tract infections are never events. The Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services do not pay for care associated with these infections after they develop in a hospitalized patient. Lack of reimbursement in healthcare has become a powerful incentive to prevent these infections. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention published guidelines for the prevention of catheter-associated infections. Here is one of their key concepts. Avoid using a catheter if at all possible. If catheters must be used, remove them as soon as these devices are no longer necessary. The CDC defines when catheters are and are not necessary. Lengthy use of indwelling catheters increases the likelihood of infections, with over 20% of catheterized patients acquiring a catheter-associated infection. 100% of patients will get a UTI if a catheter is left in place for a month. The recommended prevention methods require healthcare providers to use sterile aseptic technique during catheter insertion to maintain a closed sterile drainage system. To avoid routine catheter irrigation, as this requires opening the system, which leads to likely microbial contamination and the possibility that the irrigant solution may be contaminated. To maintain unobstructed urinary flow, keep the catheter drainage system lower than the level of the patient's bladder to prevent backflow of urine from that drainage bag. To collect specimens through needle aspiration to avoid opening the catheter tubing juncture, and to change the catheter only as indicated and not on a routine arbitrary schedule. Healthcare providers are responsible for the care of patients with catheters and need to follow the above recommended methods. Nurses and physicians have to be aware of overall patient conditions, as this affects the likelihood that patients may get a UTI. Proper fluid intake is important for cellular metabolism and maintaining urine flow through the bladder. However, healthcare staff have to be mindful of conditions in which fluid intake needs to be restricted. They have to avoid procedures that have been shown to be ineffective in preventing UTIs. These include treating bacteria collecting at the opening of the urethra, or using antibiotics for patients who do not have symptoms from the bacteria in their urine. Let's bring this back to the legal perspective. In determining possible negligence, the attorney or legal nurse consultant should review the documentation, including changes in urine color and odor and so on. Did the facility follow their own policy and procedure for catheterization and care? There are 8 reasons why it's difficult to control hospital infections, and part of your role as an LNC is understanding these reasons and educating your attorney clients. Number 1, all medical staff do not wash their hands when they should. This is not news. The single most important and effective means for preventing infections is proper hand hygiene. Unfortunately, this is a challenge for healthcare staff because of the demands of constant patient care. The advent and scientifically proven value of waterless alcohol-based hand gels and foams and liquids has added a powerful weapon to the arsenal of effective hand hygiene products. There could be a delay in diagnosing the infection. Many hospitals may not analyze their own lab tests, and thus the facility may outsource these services by sending the specimen to an outside lab. There can be a delay in obtaining the lab results from the outsourced specimens. Stat lab results may not be obtainable. While bacterial culture results are usually available within 48 hours, Gram stains can be done and read in a matter of minutes. This provides acute care infection control efforts with more rapid results. Gram staining, however, does not provide definitive results. The final culture must be reviewed and if necessary, a change in the treatment may be initiated. There could be a delay in starting the right antibiotic. That's the third point. Often treatment is initiated based on the usual causal organisms. Once these culture results are available and reviewed by the physician, a treatment plan will be re-evaluated. Some organisms are resistant to certain antibiotics. If organisms are resistant to the antibiotic used as treatment, the provider has to change the treatment. Some providers do not order the correct antibiotic or the correct dose because of lack of knowledge or not checking the culture and sensitivity report when it's available. Fourth point is that there are strains of bacteria and viruses that are not killed by antibiotics. These superbugs may invade a patient's body and kill them. Antibiotics are life-saving and at the same time lead to the development of microbial resistance to these drugs. Fifth, there are multiple opportunities for the staff or the patient to transmit the organism from the patient to someone else. Accommodations can be made for those patients who require isolation in the hospital setting. A hospital stay is temporary, so it is possible to confine patients to their room when controlling communicable diseases. However, hospitals have to face the necessity of the infected patient leaving the room for therapy, diagnostic tests, and surgery. And in some instances, patients may leave to visit other patients, go to the lounge, or even the cafeteria. Patient transport to other locations complicates the ability to control infections. The sixth point is that treatment of infections is expensive. Another barrier includes the costs of medical care, which have risen at the same time payments for care have declined. Coincidentally, patients in hospitals today tend to be much sicker, and people are living longer, which increases the incidence of chronic diseases, often requiring more sophisticated and costly care. This conundrum demands greater resources to be available, and yet fewer are available. Number seven, staffing for most infection control departments is limited and can be another major barrier in fighting infections. For years, the infection control community has unsuccessfully attempted to identify the proper infection control specialists and the ratio of epidemiologists to patients. Healthcare is in constant flux. Many smaller facilities lack an infection control department. And the last point is that the art and science of acute care infection control is far more complex now. Hospitals now have numerous intensive care units filled with critically ill, susceptible patients. Patients are living longer, they're acquiring diseases or treatments that diminish the effectiveness of the immune system. Sophisticated medical diagnostic techniques and interventions are double-edged, as they may save and prolong life, but not without risk of adverse consequences, such as infections. As an LNC, you have a role in reviewing cases involving infections. This may include looking at the timing and the appropriateness of antibiotics, the detection of signs of infection, and other aspects of infection control. One of the questions that we ask is, when a hospital-acquired infection occurred, whose fault is it? Do you want to sharpen your skills in understanding liability issues of hospital-acquired infection cases? Are you a legal nurse consultant who's asked to evaluate an infection case for liability, causation, and damages? Are you a clinician interested in understanding the medical and legal implications of these infections? You can access the wisdom of a legal nurse consultant, Valerie Lane, in exploring the liability issues associated with infections. Obtain your digital download of this video online training at this link, And the product is called Hospital Acquired Infections, Whose Fault Are They? The link is http://lnc.tips/infections. That's http://lnc.tips/infections. You can get a 25% discount on this training by using the word listened in the coupon box during checkout.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode. Check out Pat Iyer's resources for legal nurse consultants on legalnursebusiness.com. Pat coaches legal nurse consultants so they make more money, get more clients, and avoid expensive mistakes. Check out her coaching program at lncacademy.com. Please subscribe to our podcast and leave a review on iTunes. We always are interested in your ideas for new topics. Please leave a comment on legalnursepodcasts.com. Join our community and get notified of each new episode and receive the transcript of today's program. Complete the request form on legalnursepodcasts.com. We appreciate you and your interest.